This ESPN Radio Daily Podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. To get a free quote on car insurance, call 1-800-PROGRESSIVE or visit progressive.com. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive. This is the ESPN Radio Daily Podcast.
I talked about Jimmy Clausen yesterday and defended him and said I would take him over any of the other guys. He played in a he didn't play out of the shotgun a lot. He played with a pro coach, carried a team, no defensive help, won a lot of games with no running game, played from behind. Teams knew he had to throw. All these Colt McCoys, Bradfords, and Tebows played with better running games, off and out of the shotgun. But there are these questions that dog Jimmy Clausen in regards to entitlement and arrogance. And so yesterday after the show, I said to Amanda, I said, get Clausen on the show, see if he'd come on, and we'll just ask him and see what he says. So Jimmy Clausen, who I don't think's ever been on our show, Notre Dame quarterback, now getting ready for the draft. Okay, well, what I hear all these things about entitlement. When you read those things or hear about them, Jimmy, what does that mean to you?
You know, to be honest, I really don't know. But, you know, the biggest thing that I was focused on, you know, going into the combine was just getting to know the decision makers and owners and coaches, and just to get a feel for them, and to be honest, just for them to get a feel for me as a person, because, you know, there's been a lot said about me in the media, but I just want them to, you know, get a feel for me up close and personal.
Well, you were a number one high school quarterback in the country, and you go to Notre Dame. So you're a Southern California kid. You were very good at the camps. Obviously, you're getting a lot of press. And is it fair to say, Jimmy, 4 years ago, maybe you were a little high on yourself? Is that reasonable to say?
To be honest, not really. You know, I knew, you know, I was a pretty good quarterback coming out of high school, but at the same time, you know, there's a lot of guys out there, you know, that are good quarterbacks, but you just got to keep, you know, working hard each and every day, going out to practice and trying to make yourself better and, you know, making your team better. And in high school, we had a pretty good team, and, you know, it was just a fun time. And, you know, to be honest, it's a dream come true for me.
Yeah. One of the things I said is that you didn't have a great running game, and you know, a lot of times you played from behind. Did that help you? You were in a ton of close games last year. Do you think that helps you, whereas Tebow and McCoy were in a lot of blowout wins?
You know, I think so. You know, just being able to come from behind and win games in the fourth quarter is a big asset of mine. And, you know, I think a lot of coaches see that I have, you know, four fourth quarter comebacks this past year. And, you know, I want the ball in my hands at the last second, and, you know, that's what I live for, is to, you know, win games in close situations.
Is it possible, you know, and listen, I'm a radio host. People call me arrogant, and I always say it's confidence, and I believe in certain stuff, and I have an opinion.
Right.
And when people say arrogance, do you think it's possible? How possible is it? It's just you are a guy who walks into a room and knows what he wants to do.
You know, I'm a very, very confident kid. And, you know, especially on the field, I just love the game of football. And, you know, a lot of people might say I'm cocky on the field, but that's just my love for the game. I'm so passionate for the game that, you know, sometimes, you know, my emotions show, but that's just my personality and the love of the game.
You spent time at the Combine. Did people ask you about various reports that Jimmy Clausen may have some entitlement? Did that ever come up with any of the teams?
You know, some teams had questions about that, you know, asked me about my leadership style, you know, asked me about different guys on the team. And, you know, to be honest, like I said, they just wanted to get a feel for me as a person. And it was the first time that I've got to meet them and they got to meet me. So, you know, it was a lot of fun out there in Indianapolis.
Jimmy Clausen, Notre Dame quarterback, now in the NFL draft. What is the one thing you take from your time with Charlie Weiss that will help you in the NFL?
That's a hard question, but I think it'd be the way he taught me how to watch film. You know, a lot of people can just go in there, you know, flip on some tape and watch it for, you know, hour, 2 hours, but there's a certain way you have to watch tape to prepare yourself for Saturdays, and I think that's the biggest thing I took away from Coach Weiss.
Like, what did he teach you? How is there? What is the secret to watching tape?
I can't let the secret out, but, you know, there's different things. You want to look at fronts. You want to look at the corners, you know, what their stances are, the safeties, their alignments, you know, the linebackers' depth. There's just all these little things that, you know, he taught me to look at when I'm watching tape.
When you go to the combine, and, you know, there's some guys you played against that are at the combine, and did anybody surprise you? Did you see anybody and you thought, wow, that guy's maybe better than I thought?
You know, there's a lot of guys that I knew pretty well at the combine, you know, coming out of high school, got some relationships, but, you know, I think the biggest one that surprised me was, you know, Jacoby Ford. You know, he was in my group, the quarterbacks and the receivers, and, you know, to see him run the 40-yard dash was pretty amazing. And then I got to see, you know, my buddy CJ Spiller and Golden Tate, and, you know, I was just really happy for all those guys because, you know, they wanted to run real fast, and obviously they did.
You know, if you look at your overall Notre Dame record, not great, and I don't have it in front of me. It was like around 500, a couple games under 500. If you were to do it all again, are you glad you picked Notre Dame?
Definitely. You know, a lot of people ask me that all the time. Jimmy, how was the experience at Notre Dame? And, you know, I tell them I wouldn't change it for anything. You know, I've grown up so much as a person and a player, just going to Notre Dame and, you know, living on my own out there in South Bend, moving from California and away from my family. It's, you know, it's a special time out there and, you know, a special place at Notre Dame.
At the end of the season, after a UConn game, there was some squabble that happened. It made national press. You got a shiner. Did we ever hear the story? What happened, Jimmy? I wouldn't report it because I didn't have the answers and I didn't want to go in the air and embarrass myself or you. What happened?
You know, we obviously lost to UConn, and it was senior day, and all the seniors wanted to go out for the last time, you know, with their parents despite the loss. And you know, I wanted to be there with those guys, you know, with their family. So I decided to go out with my family as well. And, you know, we were hanging out at CJ's pub for a few hours and we decided to leave. And you know, my girlfriend at the time, I'm walking out with her with my arm around her. And, you know, this guy recognizes who I am and starts, you know, cussing at me and screaming at me and screaming at my girlfriend at the time. And, you know, I just kind of laugh it off. And as soon as I walk by him, he just, you know, cold cocks me in the side of the face. And that was pretty much the whole thing.
It would never provoke. Some guy just took a cheap shot.
Just took a cheap shot at me.
Jeez. Great. I love college sports, but that's amazing. You're good friends with Mark Sanchez. What has he told you to do?
You know, I talk to Mark a lot. You know, obviously he's coming off a knee surgery. I think last week he had it. But, you know, he just tells me a lot about the process. You know, I talked to him right before I went to the combine, and, you know, he gave me some suggestions and, you know, told me a lot about what the coaches are going to ask, what they want to see. And, you know, I'm going to talk to him definitely about after the draft and how his rookie season went and, you know, things to do, things not to do. So, you know, he's a great resource for me.
Jimmy Clausen, good luck to you, and we'll keep monitoring the situation and the continued success, Jimmy.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
To compare car insurance rates from top insurers in one easy place, visit Progressive.com today. You could save hundreds. Now that's Progressive.
It's our pleasure to bring in the Hall of Famer Dick Vitale, as we do every Tuesday at this time on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Good morning, Dickie V.
Well, good morning, Greeny. Great seeing you over at the ESPN Sports Weekend. I was like a little kid, man, running around trying to. I had my grandkids. I used them as a disguise. I made believe they wanted to meet the celebrities, and I was like a little kid, man. I'm like 70, acting about 12, getting like pictures, standing there. I wanted to get Big Mike's, but he had left when I arrived.
It was very nice to meet your family, Dickie V. You've talked about them for so many years on this show, and Dickie V was there with his grandchildren. It was very nice to see you in that way. I enjoyed it very much. But let's get to the little college hoops here, and then we'll go around sports a little bit. Let's start with what was a crazy weekend. Number one goes down. Number two goes down. Number three, Purdue, unfortunately, after losing arguably their most important player, they went down, and I'm not sure they're going to get up again. Syracuse with a dominating performance over Villanova vaults to number one. So your thoughts right now on the top of college basketball.
Well, you know, you look at the top. I think the one beauty of college basketball, we've talked about it so often, is that really, what does it matter to be number two and number three right now? What it really matters is when it comes to March and getting that number one seed. And the way I look at it right now, there are like three locks for number one seeds. I don't think they're going to change when you talk about Syracuse and Kansas and Kentucky. The fourth one is going to be interesting. The Duke has a big matchup with Maryland. They win that game. I think that Duke really is right there to get a number one seed. But I think really what really is vital right now is Kentucky's kids. How do the young kids respond after a loss? How do they respond at tournament time? You got three freshmen who really almost dominate the whole scene there other than Patrick Patterson. And I think that can be interesting. And also the ability to make the three-point shot has really been a problem for Kentucky. I think what's really exciting now, guys, are all the big games coming up that will determine whether you get in a tournament or not. For example, Connecticut and Notre Dame. That's a major game on Wednesday. There are a lot of teams just hanging. You look at Florida. They get beat by Georgia. Now they play Vanderbilt and they play Kentucky. But what happens if they lose three in a row? I mean, that's really, I think, the perception in a committee's eyes, not good.
Well, and you're right, because the first teams you were talking about, they're all playing when the tournament starts. But the later ones you started to mention there, yeah, that's where I say fun, because I'm not playing in the games, but that's where the interest now lies. So you pick the game, Notre Dame-UConn on Wednesday. Notre Dame kind of got themselves back into it a little bit, UConn as well, since Jim Calhoun has come back. Any of these games coming up, those two teams, anyone else where you lose one more and you're going to be done, you're going to be out of the tournament?
Well, you know, I think Florida now playing Vanderbilt. I think games like that are going to be major. I think, for example, you look in the Big Ten, you got teams like Illinois. I mean, I think they're going to be in, but you never know. I think that you still might win a game or two. I look at a team like UAB, 23-5, 11-3 in their conference. But in their conference, they're in a situation where right now they need some good wins as well. Coming down the stretch, I think a lot of teams out there really are in a scenario where they still got to close out and get some good solid wins.
Mike and Mike, Dick Vitale with us as he is every Tuesday at this time. I want to go back to Kentucky because, you know, Mike and I are starting to get our little wager revved up this year as we do every year. And you know what I do? I corner all of our basketball guys and I start going through these things. How concerned should a fan like me be about taking Kentucky to go a long way, maybe even the distance in the tournament, when 60% of their starters are freshmen and their two best players are freshmen?
Well, you know, I think you got to be concerned. Concerned about that youth. Concerned how they react in that time. I think you look at Kansas, you're looking at certainly solid experience when you look at Collins, you look at Aldridge, and you look at the players they have. You look at Syracuse, that 2-3 zone is a monster. It's so active, people don't face it on a regular basis, and all of a sudden you run into it. They're playing so well. Routins is better than what people think. So I think all those factors are areas you have to be concerned with. Hey, guys, can I just throw a little curveball here for a moment?
Go.
I am really tired. I don't know about you guys. I said it during the weekend, and I'll say it again. I heard it last night, too. We had a party at my house last night for the Baltimore Orioles, welcoming them here to Sarasota. Had all their players, their manager, Dave Tremblay, the GM, Andy McPhail. We had a great time. But I can't tell you how many times I heard that Tim Tebow will not make it in the NFL. I'm tired of it, man. I'm tired of all the negatives. All I keep hearing is about what he can't do. I never hear about what he can do. And all I know is every athlete should have had the kind of career this kid had. And you know what? I don't know football. I don't know it at all. I am betting that kid's going to make it and make it as a quarterback. All the experts, where were they with Tom Brady? He was picked like 200. I'm telling you now, this kid is a worker. He's got that mental, unbelievable competitiveness like a Jeter, who, by the way, the Yankees should sign right now to a lifetime contract. They should make an exception. They should make an exception with him. As they don't deal with contracts, well, let me tell you this. Jeter is an exception. He's been an exception. And I don't know if you'll agree with me on this. Jeter, to me, the face of the Yankees, has represented an organization better than any pro athlete in any sport. He has represented the Yankees with class as a winner off the field, on the field. He deserves to be treated in an exceptional way. Let me ask you, do you guys feel that Tebow can't make it?
I think it's going to be a struggle. If he makes it, it's going to be after a few years. You know, because Dickie V, you can be the greatest guy in the world. You can have the greatest intangibles in the world and all that stuff. And he is. He's a guy you want to root for. But and he can be a hard worker. You know, the league's filled with hard workers, and the league's not, you know, there's players that don't play that are hard workers as well. It comes down to what he can do on the field. And he has some issues that he has to take care of on the field. And maybe over, I think he could go a second, third round, and maybe in a couple of years when he learns those things, he may be able to play the position. But, you know, right now the jury can still be out.
Yeah, but how many rookies could step in right now and play right away in terms of a quarterback position? I'm saying, Mike, when you look at this kid down the road, I mean, think about it. This kid, why can't he learn? He's got a strong arm. He's been accurate. He's going to learn how to take snaps, learn how to take the ball by the ear. Sam Weiss said the other day he's worked with so many guys, and he said, put it down, this kid is going to be a star, not just another player. But I think all we do, because he got so much publicity and notoriety, all we do is try to find his warts and find everything wrong with the kid. I'm telling you now, I will bet you a steak dinner somewhere within 3 years, he's a starting quarterback in the NFL.
Well, I'll take the bet. That'd be fun. I would like to go to that dinner, whoever
buys. Well, I'll take the bet because either way, I'm getting a steak. I don't even care if I have to pay for it.
No loss in that. Dickie V and I actually were on a panel together on Saturday. I was the question asker, and it was Dickie V and Steve Spurrier and Bobby Valentine down at ESPN the weekend. And Dickie V, I mean, you were there. Steve Spurrier flat out said he thinks Tim Tebow is going to be a good NFL quarterback. I don't think he said great, but he will be a quarterback in the NFL. Spurrier said it without any hesitation.
Hey, guys, let me tell you this, too. I'm so ecstatic. I know Greeny, you guys, have been a big help for me with my Dick Vitale Gala. We're going to raise $1 million. But we got news just the other day. The Magic Man, Magic Johnson's coming as well with guys like Derek Brooks and Mike Allstott and Doug Williams and John Calipari and Jay Wright and Bill Self. People want tickets. You better get them now. Go to DickVitaleOnline.com as we honor Tony Dungy and we honor Tom Izzo. Jim Caldwell's coming from the Colts to introduce Mr. Dungy. Magic Johnson's going to introduce Mr. Izzo. And Greeny, you're going to introduce me.
So it's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it. I saw Dickie V on Saturday. Spent a lot of time with him. Dick, thank you.
The O is entertaining Bruce Pearl, who has turned Tennessee, you know, into a place for basketball. They're fun to watch. They beat Kentucky. They've beaten top teams. By the way, Doug Gottlieb, I just saw Doug Gottlieb in the hall, which you can't get by Doug Gottlieb without like 5 minutes of him ranting. And he said, boy, Bruce Pearl's got a nice house. Boy, Bruce Pearl's got a... And I said, well, what can I ask him? Will he be sensitive? He's like, oh, he's got a poker room. So I want to know, as a guy's guy, what's your poker room like at your house?
Oh, it's a room that doesn't get a lot of use.
Oh, it doesn't get use.
No.
It's a showpiece, basically, is what you're telling me.
Well, it's a great place to go have, like, dinner when the house is full of people.
Okay.
And, I guess it's nice to look at. But if I ever did have a poker game, it would be a great place.
Yeah.
It'd be a great place to have it.
I always wanted a cigar room, even though I don't smoke them. I always thought that was cool. And
yeah.
Yeah, but I don't smoke them, so it's kind of useless, I guess. So you beat Kentucky. Here's my thing. I'm just going to scout Kentucky, Bruce, from the outside. Love their talent, couple NBA guys. Not sure in the tournament. John Wall can turn it over, be a little immature with the basketball. What, you know, when you look at Kentucky, how did you beat them?
Well, we put them in a house with 22,000 people in orange shirts. And jumped on him a little bit, got a big lead, and then hung on for dear life. But I came away after the game, Colin, more impressed with Kentucky than before the game because they handled adversity pretty well. They didn't panic. They were down 19, and they tied it up. A lot of teams could not do that, particularly young teams. If they could just get to shoot the ball a little better from the three, then I think that would be the only question mark as it relates to their chances of winning a national championship.
Is there a team you played this year that's a lot better than people think? You know, you hear all this bracketology stuff, and you're sitting there as a coach thinking, I'll tell you, we played this team, and this team was pretty good.
Well, this may not be for the bracketologists, but Georgia in our league is a lot better than their record indicates. Georgia is going to finish either fifth or sixth in the SEC East, and they've beaten Georgia Tech. They've beaten Illinois. They beat us. They beat Vanderbilt. They beat Florida. They're really good. And Mark Fox has done a really nice job.
I'm not a big fan of this. You know, me and Boeheim got into an argument, and it was friendly because I love Jim, and he's for 96 teams, or maybe it's 96 or 9,600 teams in the tournament in March. And I'm like, good God, Jim, you want to get into the tournament, so if your AD ever gives you heat, you can say, listen, I made the tournament 15 years in a row. Do you want 96 teams, really? I mean, what, the regular season then, Bruce, is almost irrelevant.
Colin, I want expansion. We haven't expanded since 85. If you gave me a choice between no expansion and 96 teams, I'd take 96 teams. I think we can do it within the framework, of the calendar. Back when, you know, when I was at Boston College and we were making the NCAA tournament, it was only 32 teams. You had, 8 teams, getting first round byes. And, it was a great tournament then. It was a great tournament when it went to 64. If it went to 96, it would still be a great tournament. It would still, because the first round, the first weekend, is still, for me, Colin, the most exciting day or weekend of the tournament.
Yes.
By the time you get to the regional finals and the regional semifinals and the Sweet 16s, it's like watch college basketball this weekend on ESPN or CBS, and then go watch the Sweet 16. It's the same thing.
Yeah,
but that first weekend is exciting.
Yeah, no.
And we could make 96 work.
Hey, you know, it's interesting when you're in the SEC, which is big, big football country, as you well know, and that whole Lane Kiffin thing, just, it was crazy. And did it give you, not specifically to Lane, but sometimes I do worry that college sports is getting too big and too, and, you know, Lane's running for his life out of town. Did you step back and look at it and think, have we lost sort of our compass? We are college sports after all.
Yes, it is too big. It is out of perspective. However, I will tell you that on a weekend in Knoxville, Tennessee, there's nothing like going to a college football game. The pageantry of the entire weekend, the alumni, the Vol Navy. It's something you look forward to. I'm excited about our baseball team. We actually had a 70-degree day last week, and we played baseball. And I went out there for a few innings, and it was awesome to sit outside and when we played Kentucky, our students came in the building the night before and camped out. Lots of really good stuff that exists there for students and for people in the community and alumni and friends. Lane did not have to, you know, leave town in the middle of the night. And yes, that there were people that were upset. And yes, the students, you know, burned a mattress. So what? What's the difference between that and any other Saturday night? And you know what? That whole thing, I think, was overblown. But you're not wrong, Colin. It is over the top. There is the money is so big at every level, winning national championships, getting into the right bowls, how many teams get in the tournament, the salaries that coaches are paid, because there is no job security. You know, so there is no perspective, and yeah, it's the money is making it a little out of whack.
Well, let's be honest here, Bruce. You're paid to win games. I mean, academics, schmacademics. I mean, the bottom line is John Calipari gets great jobs because he can recruit and he wins games, and that's the bottom line. How responsible do you even feel for academics, or is it just?
I feel very responsible, and I feel very responsible when our guys mess up, and as we have, and you know, I'm still a teacher and I'm a coach now. The salary thing is out of whack, but what makes it out of whack, combination of a couple of things. First of all, because the business is so competitive, you do have a personal life that basically what I do is what I do 24/7 all the time, all year long. No, don't apologize. That's what it is. I'm trying to do something for myself and my family that is something that is going to make things a little bit more comfortable for them. It comes at a price. It comes at a price with your health. It comes at a price with a stress level, so on and so forth. Could I accept less and guaranteed contracts and, you know, tenure and something more along the lines? Yes, but I think since we live in a free enterprise market, the market does dictate that this is the way we exist. It's different than faculty and staff and teaching, even though we do it here on a college campus. It's different.
What do you think you're going to be, Bruce Pearl joining us, before we let you go, what are you going to be as a seed here in about 30 seconds? What's Tennessee, your 6
seed? Well, first of all, if I only have 30 seconds, I've got to tell you, my assistant coaches, I'm just like anybody else around here, manager, graduate assistant, assistant coach. But when they heard that I was going to be on the herd, I elevated to a completely different level. You have to understand, this is basically what my guys do in the afternoon while they're working and getting ready for practice, is they listen and watch you. And we, you know, I've not been on a lot. This was huge for the Bruce Pearl resume to be on the show with you today.
Wow.
On my staff.
Hey,
big
pal,
kudos.
You know, pal.
The herd? Are you kidding me?
It's pretty big for my resume, pal, just to let you know.
Well, like you said, it's a slow day, and so you had to, you know, call it out a little bit. That's fine.
You know,
I don't know, Colin. A lot of work to do. How you finish has a lot to do with, you know, what line you move. And I'm telling you, within two or three lines, I've been doing this a long, long time. So we got a lot of work to do.
You know why I know you're a man of courage? Because you are handsome, affluent, and you got remarried. That's why I know you're a man of courage. Good, congratulations on that new marriage, by the way.
Well, 2 out of 3 is not bad.
Be good, Bruce.
Thanks, Colin.
The play-by-play man for the Syracuse Orange, Matt Park. Matt, is this Jim Boeheim's best team ever?
I think it's got to be right up there. I think if you look at the teams of the late 80s that had Billy Owens and Derek Coleman and Stephen Thompson and Sherman Douglas in some combination thereof, and in some cases all of those guys all played in the NBA and made a lot of money playing basketball. So it'd be hard to say there's that many pros on the team right now, but in certainly recent memory, I think this team is probably better top to bottom than the 96 Final Four team. It's arguably better than the 03 championship team. And when you talk about the description you've used, which is the most talented, I think there's 7 players on this team that play and can really hurt the opposition.
Hey, you know, when I kind of knew earlier this season that Syracuse was going to be this good, it was probably around on the 5th or 6th game of the season, maybe a little bit later, maybe the 8th or 9th game of the season. And it was after winning, Jim Boeheim actually said, you know, we don't have a lot of problems right now. And I said, this is not the Jim Boeheim that I knew at Syracuse. And for the 15 years after, there was always problems no matter what Syracuse was doing. When he says we don't have problems, I said to myself, okay, we are loaded. This is going to be a fun year.
Yeah, it's funny. You can tell how he's sort of played it a little bit. I think he, in the late off season, leading up to through the first practices and that type of thing, the preseason poll, was trying to talk up Syracuse. Hey, we'll be pretty good. I think he knows there's benefit to being maybe ranked at the start of the year to be in the national conversation. And then from that point on, even after they're beating North Carolina and Cal and getting off to a 13-0 start, he sandbags a little bit, talking about how much better they can be. But I think he's well aware and has been well aware from early in the offseason that this is a special team. Wesley Johnson, being the biggest difference between last year's team and this year's team, is a big difference maker and has been somebody to be really excited about. But he's not the only one. Andy Routens, the way he has treated his 5th season, has just been terrific. And they're really rounding into shape right now, and I think arguably played their best game of the season on Saturday night.
Yeah, and something that kind of came up during the broadcast, I think it was Jay Billis maybe brought this up, that Jim Boeheim talked about potentially resting Wesley Johnson a little bit during the Big East tournament to kind of give him a break and get him ready for the NCAA tournament. Could that really happen?
I suppose it could. I would be surprised. I don't think Coach Boeheim approaches any game other than to win it. I think that's the way he's been. It's served him well, obviously, through more than 1,100 games or whatever it's been. And Wesley's a transcendent player. He's a guy that really makes a big difference. You'd rather have him in the lineup than not. That being said, Syracuse plays St. John's on Tuesday night. St. John's has 5 conference wins. I think if there's an opportunity to rest him in the second half, that happens. You know, the first round of the Big East tournament, that sort of thing. I don't think he necessarily has to play 40 minutes. But to completely bench him, I wouldn't rule it out. I'd be surprised. And Wesley right now looks to be in pretty good shape, battling his various injuries, and was certainly feeling frisky, I think, today in practice and putting on a dunk show and that type of thing. So I think he's on the mend.
Syracuse play-by-play man Matt Park is with us. It's All Night with Jason Smith on ESPN Radio and ESPNRadio.com, presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests like Matt appear with us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Matt, throughout college basketball, the big talk has been, is this finally going to be the year that the Big East gets nine teams into the NCAA tournament? Eight would be something. Nine would be incredible. What do you think, seeing this conference all season long? Is this worthy getting nine teams in?
You know, it's interesting to have that discussion this year. I think in the last couple of years when the Big East has been very strong, particularly last year, it felt like, you know what, there's eight or nine really good teams and nine deserving teams to get into the NCAAs perhaps. This year, I think you've got two very good teams, Syracuse and Villanova. Then you've got a next tier of pretty darn good as anybody in the country. You know, West Virginia, you know, Georgetown's kind of fading in there, but you've got Pittsburgh's right there. But that next cluster, I think, is so hard to tell apart. That's why maybe a lot of them get in, maybe they don't. I think the, you know, Louisville, Connecticut, Marquette, who can tell them all apart? You know, Seton Hall's making a strong run. Notre Dame is making a push late in the year. South Florida, if it had gotten a bounce here or there, might have been close the season stronger, and maybe even with a good run in New York, could get into the consideration. So again, it wouldn't surprise me, I think, if you're talking about eight or nine teams. I don't know that the bottom teams are that great, but they're beating up on each other. I think they'd fare well against teams from other conferences, and I don't think you can have much of a complaint if they do get in.
He's the play-by-play man for Syracuse basketball, Matt Park, and a man I'm very jealous of because he gets to go to the varsity for cheesesteak and pizza and flip night at Fagan's. Matt, appreciate your time with us on All Night. We'll talk to you soon.
Never heard of it, Jason.
Jason Stark joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, and every week he provides a terrific trivia question for us. Here's this week's.
Joe Torre has won 54% of the games he's managed in his career. But four active managers with at least 1,000 games managed have an even higher winning percentage than he does. All you have to do is name them.
All right, Jason Stark joins us here. Jason, we're working feverishly.
We are.
All right. Are you with us?
Yeah, famous last words. We think we have this.
All right, we think we have it. There's two of them that we're
pretty darn sure about.
99.9% sure of.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Bobby Cox?
You got it.
Mike Socia?
Absolutely right.
Okay.
Those two guys are tied at 55.6%. That's the highest winning percentage of any active manager.
All right, we got the top
two. That comes the hard part.
We have four more names written
down. We have a question, though.
Yes.
Does this include postseason?
It does not include postseason.
All right, then
regular season winning percentage.
We think Terry Francona may not have managed enough games. I think he took over the 04 season, right? So that would be 6 times 162.
Is 972 in my math.
Right, but you're forgetting that he also managed in Philadelphia.
Oh, right.
That dragged his winning percentage down quite a bit.
Right.
Oh, okay. So he's out.
I think he's given us a clue that it's not him.
Yes, thanks. Appreciate that. Yeah.
Did I just do that?
And then.
We locked on to that. I gotta believe it's the
other two. Cause
yeah.
It's not gonna be Lou Piniella.
Not gonna be Lou.
Those years in Tampa. Okay.
Right.
We're gonna go with Jim Leland.
You know, you're not gonna believe this. But Jim Leland does not even have a winning record.
Oh, my God! But he managed all good teams in Pittsburgh. They won the World Series in Florida. When was he on? What bad teams did he have in Pittsburgh? He left when they stopped.
In the end, it wasn't so good at the beginning. He was there a long time.
All right. Well, our other one was Tony La Russa.
Tony La Russa just misses.
Oh,
next name behind Joe Torre. He's 53.5%.
The
two guys you have not named both managed in the postseason last year. So how hard can it be?
It can't be. I thought of Charlie Manuel. It can't be Charlie Manuel, can it?
It is Charlie Manuel.
Charlie Manuel has a higher career winning percentage than Tony La Russa?
Charlie Manuel's teams in Cleveland all won. And since he's been in Philadelphia, they've had a winning record every year. And obviously the last 3 years, they've had a really good record.
That's a trick question. Who's the other one? Who's the other one?
The other one is Ron Gardenhire.
Oh, yeah, we should have gotten that.
How did we not?
This was a hard one. I felt sorry for you. I knew you had no chance.
We just did the Twins two of that. We were triple play 5 minutes
ago.
And the
sad thing is we were so confident. We so set ourselves up for failure. It's unbelievable.
All right, we got 50% of those.
That doesn't matter. You know what that is? That's an F.
All right.
Okay?
Maybe when you went to school.
Oh, 50, that's saying a lot for Northwestern. Yeah. It was 50 a B?
I know. At Notre Dame, 50% plus your two tickets on the 50-yard line.
You're done? You're done with that one?
All right, let's get around baseball a little bit here. I'm so aggravated right now.
Sick right now.
Jason Stark is with us. Okay, and he sent us a list of topics.
Yeah, whatever.
And this one certainly jumped off the page at me. The biggest buzz about the Phillies' rotation is not about Roy Halladay. Who's it about, Jason?
It's about Cole Hamels. You know, last year, Cole Hamels came into camp. He was not even close to ready because he did so little in the offseason outside of, you know, make commercials and go to banquets. He showed up last spring throwing 77 miles an hour, never topped out over 77 miles an hour. And they knew it was trouble from the get-go. Now, this winter, he has been a man on a mission. He was throwing four or five times a week, been doing that for weeks. He is in great shape. And I watched him throw on the side. I'm telling you, man, he's throwing harder on the side just in bullpen sessions than he ever threw in the games last spring. And they are really excited about how he looks. Now, he's going to have to figure out what to do about a third pitch, whether it's going to be the curveball that he kind of lost last year or whether it's going to be a cutter that he's messing with and is a favorite pitch of Rich Doobie, the pitching coach. He needs a third pitch, but just based on mindset and physical shape alone, that is a guy to watch if you got a fantasy team.
You know, we're talking about some prospects. We talked about Strasburg in Washington and when he may come up and everybody looking forward to seeing him pitch. It seems like at Braves camp, when this kid, Jason Hayward, this mighty prospect, when he steps up, it's like the mighty Casey at the bat. I mean, I can't wait to see this guy play.
I know. Well, you know, you were right up the road from him just a few days ago. I probably should mention that, huh?
Oh, yeah.
I was at the Braves camp yesterday, and it's just incredible to me how life in that camp just screeches to a halt when this guy steps into the cage. You know, it's one of my favorite things about spring training. You're standing around, you're talking. I was talking to one of the Braves officials yesterday, and he said, "Hold on, I think you're going to want to see this." And then we just stopped what we were talking about, stopped what we were doing, and stepped up to the cage and watched the Jason Hayward show. And it is quite a show. I mean, to see this guy's bat speed and to see what a physical specimen he is at 20 years old and to watch these baseballs just go flying over the fence and clattering off cars and grid work and, you know, Mickey and Minnie and Goofy. It's a mind-boggling sight. I was talking to Troy Gloss, and he said, you know, when I was 20 years old, I weighed 170 pounds. This guy's 6'4", 220. It's incredible. Now, we need to try to contain ourselves a little bit. He's 20 years old. He has not even had 900 professional at-bats yet, but they want him to make the team. And there's no doubt that Steven Strasburg or no Steven Strasburg, he is the best prospect in baseball.
Mike, Jason Stark, two more quickly for you. First off, we will have the commissioner, Bud Selig, on the program today, 9:25 Eastern time. So an hour from now, he will be live. If you had one question, we'll record it, we'll play it for him. What's one question that needs to be asked to Bud Selig today, Jason Stark?
Well, here's a well-timed question that you guys can ask Bud Selig, and that is, after watching what happened with Olympic hockey, will it cause him in any way to reconsider his stance on sending major league players to the Olympics, which has been the IOC's just about number one demand if they're going to reinstate baseball? Isn't that a germane question?
It's a perfect question.
Good question.
We will play that for him exactly. That will be with Bud Selig. And then
I can tell you how he's going to answer it, but let him answer it, I suppose.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's more significant that he answers
sure.
it.
Sure.
You
yeah.
can't ask and answer the question.
You can't do that. Listen, you're doing enough but killing us in the trivia. Don't start taking everything.
That's one of the things Bud hates about me the most is I would like to answer the questions as I'm asking them.
Well, and then listen, when I become the commissioner of baseball, I'll give you a role in my cabinet.
We have a deal.
And then finally, Jose Reyes and Alex Rodriguez are two Major League Baseball players who have been linked to this Dr. Gallia from Canada, who was also linked to Tiger Woods. A-Rod is going to have to speak to federal prosecutors, Reyes as well. Is that going someplace? Is that something baseball fans in what has been a fairly scandal-free spring need to be paying attention to?
I would keep that on the radar screen. Now, you know, it's a little difficult to know what to make of it yet. But, you know, if you look at the tenor of the questions that they asked Jose Reyes, the fact that they asked him about whether he was injected with HGH, I think tells us where this investigation is leading. Now, blood's spinning. I'd never heard of it, but from what I'm told, it is legal. But if you add something to the blood while you spin it and before you re-inject it, that's not so legal. You know, I think we're seeing some big names here who are going to be brought in. I mean, Tiger Woods' name has now surfaced. A-Rod has now surfaced. The Yankees have said they had no knowledge that A-Rod was treated by this guy. I would watch this very carefully. I don't think the players themselves are in trouble, but this could be the next wave of trying to beat the performance enhancement police.
All right, well, keep an eye on it. I got to tell you, I'm in no mood for it. I really am not. I'm dying for this to go away.
Yeah. Well,
and just get baseball started, but we'll see. All right, Jason, thank you. You've humiliated us on our own program once again.
Go away.